Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
go, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live. It is Friday night. This is the MGC Roundtable. We want you to call 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. Give us a call here and get your voice in on tonight's discussion. We're going to talk a little bit about Benghazi and Petraeus. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the Middle East. We're going to talk about Hostess, of course. We're going to talk about this seceding thing. Then I believe Teresa is going to join us a little later, and we're going to talk a little bit more about demographics in this last election. And specifically in this session, we're going to talk about the Catholic / other Christian vote and what happened there. So we'll move on now with our first topic of the night. And in case you hadn't realized it already, because of the lack of introductions, one more Friday night, I'm the only person at the round table. So we have another square table night of Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. I'm not sure what the future of Missouri Grassroots Friday Night Roundtable is. So, but for tonight, we're here. I had a long, long discussion today with someone about the Constitution of the United States. And this person fancied himself a scholar of the Constitution. And once again, it was apparent that he had no clue, that he had absolutely no clue what the Constitution was and why it was, what the purpose of the Constitution was, and how it even got there. Now, listen, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. You're going to hear me say it again. You don't need a degree in constitutional law to get it. You don't need a degree in law to get it. You don't need a degree in history to get it. The Constitution of the United States, when I went to school, was ninth grade civics. I understand that today it's hardly mentioned in school. But if I could get it in the ninth grade, anyone could get it. The Constitution isn't some eternal thing that was always there. And so the 13 colonies who were dissolving the Confederacy reached out and grabbed onto it. It was a thing that did not exist. 13 sovereign states got together and said, we need some common protection. We need a central government to do some things for us. You had every state coining its own money. You had every state making treaties with France and Spain and England. And understand that France was a problem for the southern states. They had this expanse of colonization going on in the South, what eventually became the Louisiana Purchase. Understand that the British were a problem for the northern states who had British colonies around them north of the Canadian border and west into the Native American territories. But you had states, individual states, making treaties and trade treaties and trade agreements with sovereign nations, as though each state were an independent nation. You had states bickering over expansion territories. You had states making their own decisions as to who was a citizen and who was not a citizen, and to what it took to become a citizen. And so they decided they needed some central government to take care of some of these issues. Problems between the states, making treaties with foreign countries that would be binding on all 13 states. And there was long, long discussions about how the government should be formed, how many branches should there be, how many branches of legislature should there be. But the bottom line is that the overriding theme that wove through this whole thing was that this government, this central federal government, was going to have no more power than those specific powers given over by the sovereign states to this central authority. So, in other words, the states said, okay, we're going to give this central government authority to make treaties so that we don't have all 13 of us making treaties. We're going to give this central government authority to coin money so that all of our money looks the same and is the same and can be traded equally across the borders of the 13 states. And they were very, very careful to lay down, if you want to look at it, it is Article 1, Section 8, specifically a list of powers that this central government was going to have. The list is very specific, and it is very limited in the power that these states handed over to this central authority. And no other power was given to this central government. That was the Constitution of the United States. So how we got, and on the Hour of Truth, we're going to start a series. That's Monday nights, the Hour of Truth. We're going to start a series from right where we just talked about. And we're going to go through history. We're going to go through Wickard and Marbury and Lincoln. And we're going to finally get to where we are today, where the Constitution just is nothing but a rag to be used to wipe the table with, basically, because the federal government, this centralized government, whose powers were supposed to be specifically restricted and no more, has assumed all power, has assumed all authority. Now, the way I got into this discussion today was with this fellow, and he was not understanding something that I was saying. If you want to make abortion illegal, if you want to make gay marriage illegal, my friends on the right, if you want to feed the hungry through a system of taxation, if you want to insure everyone's doctor bills through a system of taxation, if you want to pray in the public school, or if you want to outlaw praying in the public school, if you want to educate your children the same in California as you do in New York, change the Constitution. I'll tell you right now to go to Article 5 of the Constitution to find out how to do that. When these fellows made this document, they realized that things might change. They realized that nothing stays the same forever, that this great land might grow and contract, and the economy would change and shift, and trade partners would come and go, and wars would come and go. Slavery was a major issue, of compromise when the Constitution was written. And yes, brothers and sisters, who think that compromise is a bad thing, the Constitution of the United States is a document of compromise. If you want all of those things, I don't care whether I agree with you that they're good or not. Change the Constitution. There's a way to do that. And get your socialized medicine in the Constitution. When you do, whether I like it or not, I'm on your side. Because the Constitution is what governs this country. The reason that the Constitution was established, and established in a way that is hard, difficult to change, is so that it is to protect us from a democracy. It is to protect us from even a majority of the people being able to go to the polls on any given Tuesday and vote in something, vote some power to the federal government that doesn't belong there. To vote either in or out some right that doesn't belong there. It really is that simple. The Constitution was written, and you can read the 9th and 10th Amendment of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and we're going to talk about the Bill of Rights again just quickly here in a second. You can read the 9th and 10th Amendment and see, I mean, if you read it in the light of what I just said, that these are the only things the federal government can do, you can see that the mindset of the founders of this country was, here's an individual, Joe Jones, he has all the liberty in the world to do whatever he wants. Here he is, a member of this state. This state is a sovereign piece of property, and this state can make laws and regulate to some extent Joe Jones to keep him from killing his neighbor, to keep him from stealing from his neighbor, even to keep him from spitting on the sidewalk or tying his horse up in front of someone else's house. This state can make these kind of laws because the state is a sovereign body. But the federal government, the co-op between the states, has only this much power. All other power, all other rights belong to the states and to the people. And let's separate that right now. All other power, not specifically given to the federal government, belongs to the state. And all other rights belong to the people. The people have unlimited rights, and there's a recognition that any law is an infringement upon liberty, is an infringement upon your right. And so the federal government was specifically limited. Now, that puts the 9th and 10th Amendment in its place, because the 9th and 10th Amendment mean nothing unless you look at them with respect to the rest of the document. We've got then along comes this, it's time now to ratify this thing, okay? And this is where I get in trouble with the people that I talk about this with, and that is, okay, wait a second now. We got a caller. Hello, caller. This is Dave. How are you?
I'm good. It's Lisa. How are you?
I'm waiting for your name to pop up there before I said anything, and I didn't see it, so I thought, well, maybe that's someone else. Okay, Lisa's here tonight, and I was just giving a little rant about the Constitution in this discussion I had with some fellow today, and let me wrap that up, and then we'll move on, Lisa, to whatever it is you want to talk about.
Okay.
But anyway, here's the problem that you have when you discuss the Constitution with people like this. It is that they assume that if you don't have that you don't have a right that isn't given to you by the Constitution. So, you know, this is the kind of mindset that Madison and Hamilton had in mind when they opposed accepting the Bill of Rights as part of the Constitution. The Constitution was written, it was shot out to the states for ratification, and the states came back and wanted this Bill of Rights, this thing that we consider to be one of the greater parts of the document. They thought was one of the worst parts of the document. They didn't even want the Bill of Rights. And the reason they didn't want the Bill of Rights was because they knew in their wisdom, that if you put the Bill of Rights in here, if you say people have the right to a free press, people have the right to freedom of speech, people have the right to a religion, people have a right to all of these things that they just assumed because they're not specifically granted as powers to the federal government, they just assumed everyone knew that those rights belong to you. If you put those in a Bill of Rights, what you're going to get is a Supreme Court justice or a president or a Joe Jones on the street who comes along 200 years later and says, where in the Constitution does it say you have a right to privacy? Well, I'm sorry, it doesn't. Where in the Constitution does it say you have a right to drive down the street without a intoxication checkpoint? Well, it doesn't. And that's because the framers of the Constitution just assumed you had that right. Here's a right. It's always been yours. It will always be yours. We did not give the federal government power over that right, so it belongs to you. I mean, how many decades did the damn Supreme Court argue and debate over whether you have a right to privacy because it doesn't say it in the Constitution? And that was the fear of Madison and Hamilton when they argued against the Bill of Rights. Because here was this perfect document, nothing's perfect, okay? Here was this near perfect document that had been fought over and debated and organized and came out of that Philadelphia Convention as a masterpiece of compromise. A masterpiece of compromise, remember this, with specific ways it could be changed, but specifically limiting the power of defining the federal government and specifically limiting its power to a list of things that you could find in Article 1, Section 8. That's it. That's all the power the federal government had. And that seemed like a pretty clear and clean-cut document to them. And then along come the states, and the states were maybe rightly afraid that over time the federal government would grow into this big, obnoxious monster and start sucking up people's rights. And so they demanded that these specific rights be guaranteed by a Bill of Rights. Madison and Hamilton said, no, 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 no. Because the minute you do that, you actually risk a big, expansive federal government coming along and sucking up every right that it doesn't specifically say you have. And saying, where in the Constitution does it say you have a right to say a prayer on Main Street? That's just basis of the discussion that I had. I mean, it scares me that you have to have this discussion with people who are educated, with people who are knowledgeable, and with people who, by education, consider themselves to be scholars of the Constitution of the United States. But it scares me, but it doesn't surprise me, for goodness sake. You've got a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who's decided that the power of taxation means the federal government can force you to buy a private product. So it doesn't surprise me. It's just scary. And like I said before I started, you know, do yourself a favor. I mean, clear your mind. Clear your mind of everything you've ever learned. Clear your mind of everything you believe. Go read the Constitution. Read it. It's not a difficult read. But then, I mean, then we're going to get to a difficult read because go read the notes. I mean, they're copious. The notes, the debates, the papers, and the letters that were written during the Philadelphia Convention. Copious and meticulous notes were taken during these debates. Minutes were kept, and they're out there for reading. Then go read the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. Now, there's a tough read, folks, but wade through it. And when you get through all that, go back and reread the Constitution, and you'll see that I'm right. You'll see that you don't get to have Obamacare. You don't get to have food stamps, you don't get to have, we might want those things. If you want those things, change the Constitution. The day you change the Constitution, I'm on your side. I might not agree with you that Obamacare is a great thing, but you put it in the Constitution, you get three-fourths of the United Sovereign States to say that's what they want, and I'm on your side because I'm on the side of the Constitution. I don't think my next-door neighbor should be entitled to a damned AK-47, okay? But I will die for his right to have one because it's in the Constitution. Help me out. We'll get the Constitution changed so that there can be some limit to the amount of arsenal that my next-door neighbor can have, and then I'll be on your side. But until then, I am on the side of my next-door neighbor being able to have all the damn guns he wants, because that's what the Constitution says. So if you want your Obamacare, if you want your food stamps, if you want your no abortion, if you want your gay marriage restrictions, if you want your everybody can have an abortion, change the damn Constitution, and then I'm on your side. Okay, Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing just great. How are you tonight, Dave?
Great. Do you have something you want to talk about for a minute?
Oh, you know, I'm just kind of along for the ride. The thing that's been on my mind most today is the insurance exchanges coming up here in Missouri. And I'm waiting for the sidestep from the legislature because I think that they're not sincere about keeping them at bay.
I'm sorry, Lisa. You're just going to have to pretend that I heard that. I was off answering the phone.
Oh, sorry. I am not at the computer. I think that we're going to have some problems with the insurance exchange issue with the legislators. I don't think that they're going to hold fast in fighting that off.
Well, two states already have. Ohio said today that they were not going to establish an exchange.
I'm not worried about the other states. I'm worried about ours.
I am too. But all I'm saying is there is precedent for it. We're not out on our own, swinging on a limb if we do. So, no, I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, we need to worry about Missouri. We don't need to worry about Ohio. But we need to point out to these people that this is doable, that it has been done, that it can be done, that we are the sovereign state of Missouri, and they need to get it done. I see you have a grass fire alert on that very thing. Am I right?
That's right. I don't know if you also noticed or heard today that the federal government extended the deadline to commit to establishing insurance exchanges. So I guess they see they're getting a little pushback, and now that the political machines in the states need their time to schmooze and smoke and mirrors their way into the deal.
Yeah, and the other thing that's happening on the federal level is that that up there in Health and Human Services, they are finding out that implementing this Obamacare is actually a little bit more physical labor and 15-hour days than what they imagined it was going to be, and it's just a lot of work. And I think a lot of these extensions are going to be forthcoming as they realize that they can't just wave a magic wand and make this crap happen.
Well, you know, it sure would be nice if the entire nation kind of – I think Missouri is getting on board with the state sovereignty issue a lot stronger, and it would be great if that wave kind of swept across the nation, because we did have – it was very clear we had a divided – we have a divided electorate. 50% of the people just – you know, there's no mandate electing this president again. And I think that everybody's going to go after the state sovereignty issue to fight these ridiculous – this ridiculous Obama agenda that's coming down from on high in the federal government. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, we're not the only ones. I'm sure most of the country thought that things would be different and we could fight this Obamacare after the election was over.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I think, you know, and again, they said that in the legislature last session. I realized that probably 53% of them that said it were just paying lip service to it. But you know, they said, oh, well, why worry about this Obamacare nullification and this Proposition C, was it, we voted on two elections ago that said no Obamacare for us?
Yep, Prop D and Prop C. see. I mean, we've got plenty of reason to not.
Yeah. They said, well, why worry about that? Because, you know, after the election, there's going to be no Obamacare anyway. Well, surprise, surprise. Here it is. And, yeah, you're right. We're hip deep in it. The legislature in Jefferson City, new and old folks, met today to lay out the groundwork for their upcoming session. They haven't even pre-filed bills yet, but they're having their discussions about this is our agenda, this is our key topics, this is the direction we want to go with this thing. And
so let's talk about what the agenda should be for the legislature this session.
Well, let's introduce our guest first. We have Teresa. Teresa Kessler Stone is here. Hi, Teresa.
Hello, Dick. How you doing?
I'm good. Get in on this now. Lisa's getting ready to go into what we at Missouri Grassroots Coalition and listeners, Teresa is a valuable member of the executive committee at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and we've brought her along specifically to talk later in the show about a specific item. But she's bright and she has great ideas, and she's going to get into this discussion because that's what the Friday Night Roundtable is all about. And it's also about you if you want to get in at 347-677-1835. Okay, Lisa, go ahead. What should the agenda be?
Well, okay, so we kind of discussed this a little bit amongst ourselves in the executive committee today, but I think that there's going to be a tidal wave of support for just focusing on state sovereignty issues. From the grassroots movement. And I think that the Missouri State Legislature needs to redirect its focus and take it off of some of the ridiculous, fluffy legislation that they've been trying to push the last couple of years and just kind of redirect it towards state sovereignty issues. I mean, that's what they should be doing anyway, haven't been doing it, and have not been effective in doing their jobs the last couple of sessions, you know, bringing about certain kinds of education reform and keeping taxes low, maintaining tax credits, system free of tax credits in Missouri. So I'd like to see them redirect their focus and get out of business as usual and change their agendas.
Teresa, get in on that.
I am, but I wanted to comment on the health insurance exchange that you guys started out talking about when I joined the call.
Sure.
And I got Lisa's alert, and I sent out emails to the different legislators, and I've gotten reply from David Sater and Brian Nevis and Rob Scharf, all seemingly supporting the fact that Missouri has spoken with Prop C and Prop E, and they plan on doing their part to follow the people's wishes. At least that's what they're saying. Now, how they'll act, I don't know. But those are the responses that I'm getting, and I don't know if anybody else has acted or gotten responses, but I just wanted to make that public.
Well, I didn't write everybody. I wrote to my legislators. I wrote to Jones, and that was the extent of my emails, but I've gotten no responses back. Lisa?
Ditto.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is Brian your legislator, Teresa?
No, I was just going off the alert that Lisa posted giving email addresses.
Right.
Unfortunately, my legislators are Democrats.
That's quite unfortunate.
And my experience with them is they do what they want to do and they don't listen to me.
Right.
So I just thought I would take a different approach and contact the ones that she recommended, and I got some positive feedback.
Good. Good. Well, that's good. I mean, that's good. I wonder what kind of feedback we'd get from, like, say, Kevin Engler or I'm actually interested in hearing back from Jones, who's probably going to wield some power this time around.
Do you not find it interesting? Here's what I find interesting about this whole deal. You know, I mean, it's not like you guys do not have a mandate anyway. You know, two different ballot initiatives in the last 4 years telling the legislature, hell no, just say no. And, you know, so why this is even coming up for discussion, why it's up for consideration, why we're not getting responses from our legislators like, hell no, we're not going there.
You know, well, I mean,
we're polite little responses, you know, very diplomatic responses. You know, I want some backbone. You know, I want some brass ones. Tell me something that I want to hear.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, Lisa, what's going on is the legislators are fearful, and maybe rightfully so, of what the people of Missouri, has the average voter in Missouri who's writing these letters, I'm not talking about you and Teresa, I mean, I know you're knowledgeable and intelligent on these things, but has the average person in Missouri, the 71% who are saying, hell no, we won't go, tell them in Washington to stick it in their ear, has the average person thought about what's going to happen to Missouri when the federal government says, okay, no more Medicare money, okay, no more education money, okay, Missouri, this $12.5 million we've been sending you, you're not getting anymore? Has the average Missourian stopped to think about that? I mean, that's what scares these legislators.
Why aren't they getting their education money? Why aren't they getting their Medicare money? This is about Medicare expansion. It's not about stopping Medicare altogether.
Well, I mean, what is going to be the penalty to the state of Missouri when we refuse to adopt an insurance exchange? I mean,
exactly.
we're going to get some boot when we do that. You know, when we take back our education, when we say no Common Core for us, we're going to get some boot, and it's going to be in the form of money.
Right. Well, this is not about Common Core.
No, this is about insurance exchanges. I know, and I wasn't trying to introduce another thing, but I'm just trying to say, whichever direction you go to fight the federal government, you're going to get a money penalty. You're going to get a kick in the teeth, and it's going to be in the form of money, and that's what the legislators are afraid of. Now, I think it's up to the people of Missouri, and we'd ought to include this every time we communicate with the legislator, to say, we're ready. Bring it on. You know? We'll pay the piper, but just get those people out of my backyard.
Which is perfect, and it makes sense. But again, the regular public, are they aware that that's a penalty?
Right.
And if they're not, and that's what comes down, then that's where the legislatures are fearful, which is what you're talking about.
Right.
I don't see how that they can penalize us in other areas for not setting up insurance exchanges.
Well,
they would penalize us by pulling Medicare dollars that they send our way or Medicaid dollars that they send our way. That's the federal portion of health care money in Missouri because we're not following the federal law, just like they do with highways and roads. If we don't follow certain rules that come down from the federal government, they pull money as saying, okay, fine, you're not going to follow it, we don't give you money.
Right. You know, and I wasn't saying that they would pull our education money if we don't establish an exchange. I was just saying these are the kinds of sovereignty issues that we talk about that we need to understand have money attached to them.
Right. Well, you know, so we know government always spends everything that they get. There's no reason they can't tighten their bootstraps to pay for some of these other issues. I mean, there's bloated bureaucracy and money going in places that does not need to be going. And so if they have to tighten their bootstraps to get that done, then they have to get it done.
Well, I mean, sure, yeah. I mean, if they, in my mind, if the federal government...
How much money is that?
Sorry?
How much money is that?
Well, I don't know. I would have to look at the budget to see, but it's all of the federal money that the state gets is tens of millions. I don't know how much of that is Medicare money, how much of it is Department of Agriculture food stamp money, how much of it is this or that or some other thing. We could probably work on breaking that out, but not in the next.
There are repercussions from the state also that, you know, I mean, that has an uphill climb. I mean, if we're not getting our Medicare money, then, you know, Mr. Blunt should be dancing there.
Well, he should be. And so should, I mean, so should Medicare Claire. But Medicare Claire will be the first one on the bandwagon to cut us off if we don't take her exchanges.
Sure.
True.
And then the people are getting the government they deserve because they voted her in. But,
well,
you know
what might happen if we, you know, this, and this is going to, this is, it's going to be a painful transition, but I'm all for let them take their Medicare money, you know, because what we get when we fund it ourselves is a better system, better medicine. Let them take their shitty medicine back to Washington with them when they take their money.
Yeah.
All their paperwork and their 10 cents on the dollar payment and all that crap, let them take it with them.
And that works for me just fine. So, I mean, folks, it's just absolutely foolish for anybody, and I don't care how informed a voter that you are or you are not, to think that you can continue this entitlement lifestyle and way of life that we have in this country and just continue to maintain this. You can't. Something's got to give. We have totally maxed it out. And if we have to rearrange things to pay for Medicare and take away another entitlement, then we just have to, because we just can't keep doing this. And if we have to do it on a state level because they won't do it on a national level, then we have to do it.
You don't hear any argument from me on that.
Me neither.
It's time. And what's going to be fun, what's going to be really fun to watch, is the day that Washington comes down and says, you can't have any more Medicaid money, Medicare money, Medicaid money, whatever kind of money. The state of Missouri, if they're smart, will turn around and say, then you can't have any more of our money. And when that happens, there's going to be a constitutional crisis, and we'll see what the fallout of that is. It absolutely goes. I mean, you know, people want to whine about federal control of education, federal control of medicine, federal control, and I'm with them. I'm whining all the way with them. But anybody here read Heinlein?
No.
I mean, there's this guy in a Heinlein story called "The Moon Is a Harsh Mistress." There's this saying, "Tanstoffel." It occurs all throughout the book. Tanstoffel, and it's Tanstaffel. And what it basically is there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. You take the government money, you pay the government piper, and. I'm just not convinced that all these people that are crawling all over these legislators, and that's what the legislators are afraid of, which is where we started on this, understand that when you stand up for your rights, you're going to pay a price.
Yep.
Well, you know, I mean, it all needs to come out in the open, and the legislators need to quit dancing, you know, and if there's an issue, you know, and they're worried about the budget and how that, you know, then put it out in the open, shine some light on it, talk about it in the media, talk about it out, you know, start the issue. The standard form of modus operandi is to smoke and mirrors everything, you know, and it's ridiculous, you know. It's not. The legislators need to communicate with the folks about what the consequences are for the actions if there's a problem, and just be open and honest about it. I don't really think that there should be a problem, honestly.
Well, I don't either. I mean, I don't either, but I'm not, and you're not, and Teresa's not, the average voter out there who just doesn't have a clue how much money is going to be attached to this thing, and what I think, and you think, and Teresa thinks that in the end, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, we're better off for it. But there's going to be some pain getting there. I mean, there's going to be some people without Medicaid coverage, without Medicare coverage for some periods of time, off and on, until we get to that point.
Well, yes, there will.
You know, I mean, Missouri's hospitals, St. John's and Mercy Clinic and all these other big hospitals, they're going to be better off, and they know it. I mean, they're going to be better off in the business model when the state of Missouri takes over the care of the indigent and takes it out of federal hands. And looses itself from that federal money. Teresa, you're the healthcare expert. Am I right or am I wrong?
Again, I think you're right in the end, getting there is going to be really painful.
So will the government work with these hospitals and say, look, here's the bucket of gold at the end of the rainbow. You help us out. You know, suck up some of the cost of taking care of these people for 2 years, 2.5 years, however long it takes us to get there, and we're all in greener pastures when it's over.
Yep. That is true.
I think they're going to have pushback from the healthcare industry, because the healthcare industry has been allowed to inflate prices of medical care and bloat their own bureaucracies. And they're the ones who, if you're going to ever see reasonable healthcare in this country, you're going to have to find a way to trim back the medical community.
That'll start with tort reform, because tort reform is a huge piece of the cost of medicine.
Absolutely.
Because of the lawyers are coming after the doctors, therefore the doctors have to do this. And to supply, because we in America have to have the latest, greatest, and best, then all these companies go into medical development and research, and that inflates costs. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into the bloating of the healthcare system. Is it bloated? Yes. Does it need to be fixed? Yes. But it's not a one-gun approach. It's going to be a multi-prong approach.
And 90% of that bloat, and this is what Teresa was referring to, if I'm not wrong, is caused by the federal government. It's not caused by greedy doctors. It's caused by the federal government and, as she said, the tort system. In other words, I go into the doctor, I say, oh, man, I got this little cough. The doctor has to do $30,000 worth of tests for my little cough, because God forbid, you know, she skipped one and I die of cancer.
Right.
And the insurance industry also, I think, has a great deal to do with the cost of medicine.
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. It's all a part of it.
And insurance in general. I mean, you know, you've got this group of people in the country, you know, who are like me, and I don't know where you stand, Lisa. I don't know where you stand, Teresa, but are like me. I have excellent health care coverage. It's outstanding. Thank you very much, taxpayers, for buying that for me. But and then we have the very low end of the totem pole, where people are covered by Medicaid 100%. People go to the doctor when their kid has a runny nose. They don't pay a dime. But we've got this group of people in the middle who are trapped in this system that is being inflated by the insurance industry. And it's being inflated by the insurance industry because the people like me and the people like the lady with the kid with the runny nose, we don't have to give a crap what it costs.
Yeah.
See, I don't have to care. I don't have to shop for good price. I don't have to shop for good service even. Because I'm going to go, I'm never going to see a bill. Once in a while, there's going to be a copay that shows up and I have to send $10 in the mail.
Well, and the other piece of that is,
you can't shop for price.
We can't shop, exactly. That's because of the power of the insurance industry. They won't let us shop for insurance like we can shop for car insurance. If we could, that would be a whole change in the system and costs would come down.
Yeah,
right.
Have you ever tried to shop? I mean, I have tried to shop for prices. They won't let you. The hospitals will not give you costs. They will not. You cannot.
They're not required to, yeah. So
they will
not.
They will not work with you. And, I mean, you know, I've tried. They just won't do it.
And as far as shopping for insurance, that's really hard to do because most health insurance is tied to jobs. And if it were taken away from the jobs and made individual, like car insurance is,
right,
it'd be a huge change in the system, and some costs would come down just on that alone.
Do you know, does anybody here know why health insurance is tied to jobs?
No.
Back after the Depression, what couple of things happened. The federal government got on the side of the unions, and the federal government installed a minimum wage, and the federal government installed labor laws. And what you had was an overregulated labor market, to where now everybody's getting paid the same for doing the same work. And so I'm an employer. What have I got now left to attract the best people.
Well,
which is where those benefits come from.
It's where those benefits come from. And again, it is a direct consequence of federal meddling.
Not surprising at all.
Yeah. Lisa, you're right. We need to stay on the legislature. We need to make sure that we don't get insurance exchanges established in Missouri along with the will of 71% of the voters of the state. We need to formalize, in my eyes, an Obamacare nullification. Complete, not just down to insurance exchanges, but complete with penalty for anyone who comes to Missouri and makes any effort to force someone to buy any kind of insurance. But we need to do that with our eyes wide open as a people, knowing that there's no such thing as a free lunch. That this thing is gonna cost us.
All right, go.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Now we're going to come back and we're going to move on to our one of our other items of the night. And we invited Teresa along specifically to talk about this. And it has to do with more demographic breakdown of last week's vote. There you go. Stay tuned for that.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
There it is. That's Patrick Henry. Ladies, there was a time when there were people in this great land who thought everything depended on liberty. That liberty was more important than life itself. How far we've come from that. Okay, you heard the commercial there, folks. And if you want to get involved in this discussion that's coming up, or any discussion, it really is an open mic. We'll take a break from whatever we're talking to talk about whatever you want to talk about. It is the Friday Night Roundtable. 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. Lisa, we're pretty close on this Secret Santa thing. We need to get just a little bit more, and we'll be there.
Good deal.
It's the Secret Santa, listeners. If you're just tuning in for the first time, if you're not, you've heard about it, and I don't know why you haven't acted on it yet. The Secret Santa is a project, a project that Missouri Grassroots Coalition does. What we do is late on Christmas Eve, when we can be sure that we're not jumping the gun, we go to a department store somewhere and we find a layaway that has toys in it, toys that obviously were put there for some kid's Christmas morning, and that obviously at this point in time aren't going to be sprung out of layaway. Who knows why? We don't ask why. We don't, you know, it could be the parents are irresponsible with money. We don't know and we don't care. It could be that dad lost a job or mom lost a job. It could be one of the kids got sick and a big hospital bill came up. We don't know. A car breakdown. But those kids aren't going to get those toys for Christmas morning. And so we pay that layaway bill. We have the manager of the store call the family and tell them, come get the toys for your kids' Christmas. Our goal this year is to be able to do that for four families scattered across the state of Missouri. Just picked at random. We don't ask their religion. We don't ask their politics even. They might be liberal kid children, but they deserve a Christmas just like every other child. So listen, we're almost to our goal of $500. That would let us do four families. That's twice what we did last year. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. In the top, you'll see a Secret Santa button. Please click on it. Please use PayPal right there to send us $5, $6, $1, $10. We'll take $100 if you've got it to send. And help us do this thing. Don't put it off till tomorrow. Right now. Right now, you're at your computer listening to us. So go do it. You can still listen to us while you open up another window. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button, and send us a dollar or two for this Secret Santa thing. Okay. I am at a loss for, and specifically, we've asked Teresa to come along. Teresa's a great friend of ours. She's a member of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Executive Committee. So Lisa, Teresa, and I, we have a lot of discussion, and I know Lisa to be a Catholic. I know her to be a practicing Catholic, and I know her to be one who believes in the precepts of her church, and I want her to share with us what she thinks. Now, Here you go. Before we get started, let's just break down the facts. 25% of the people who voted in the last election identified themselves as Catholics. Of that 25%, 50% voted for Barack Obama. Now, Teresa, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's forcing Catholic hospitals to buy contraceptives for their employees, who believes that it's not okay to fund any kind of religious organization except Mohammedism, and that it is okay to fund an artist whose claim to fame is a crucifix in a bucket of pee. And who believes that it is part of the federal duty to provide abortions for poor women? What is up with this Catholic vote, Teresa?
Unfortunately, I'm believing it's the cafeteria Catholic mentality again. I'm going to pick and choose what I agree with the church on, and otherwise I'm going to do what I want, and I'm going to vote how I want, and I'm not going to pay attention. That mentality has become pervasive at this point in time.
And you know, to an extent, I understand that. I mean, I'm a Southern Baptist, and it certainly is rampant in the Southern Baptist Church, you know, what you just said, you know. But we're not talking about, I mean, and I understand, you know, that a good majority of Catholic women probably use some sort of contraceptive. But we're not talking about, you know, whether you take a pill or not. We're talking about forcing a church to violate the precepts that it has lived with for centuries. We're talking about abortion.
I agree with you. I understand. I don't get it. I don't understand how somebody can call themselves a Catholic and support someone who obviously is pro-abortion and obviously doesn't want the Catholic Church to teach what the Catholic Church teaches. And again, these people are attached to the Catholic Church, but maybe they don't feel the attachment like I do. And therefore, it's not important to them, which I don't understand how they can be Catholic and not be. But that is my perception.
Am I wrong? I mean, I'm not in the church of your choice very often. Am I wrong? I mean, was the church pretty clear in what their belief was?
The church is very clear. I mean, between now, how many people read the review, how many people read the bulletins, I don't know.
Okay.
And whether it's been, the review is the local archdiocesan paper, so I know that goes across the area. Each church puts their own information in their bulletins, but there was a paper put out there by the bishops that aren't saying you have to vote or not vote for certain people.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But these are the beliefs that you should support. Pro-life from conception to grave. The ability to have religious freedom and teach what the church teaches and believe what the church believes and not have government interference. And so they were clear on those sorts of things. And then conversely, you know, those that promote destruction of life, whether it's at conception or the end of life, you know, and so they compared and contrasted, and this is what you should support and this is what you shouldn't support if you call yourself a Catholic.
The quote unquote other Christian vote broke in a little bit heavier percentage for Mitt Romney. Is there a feeling in the devout Catholic community of fear toward the evangelical Christian movement?
I don't perceive that as being the case.
I'm just curious.
I consider myself devout, but I know there are people that are more stringent than I am, and maybe with that group there might be.
Okay.
But it's not a perception that I'm aware of in general. I mean, you know, Christian is Christian and Catholic is Catholic, and we have similarities and we have differences. And yes, there are people Catholics who are out there as, you know, Catholic all the way and nothing else but Catholic. And those people may have a concern with the evangelicals. But a lot of us feel like we're all Christian. We got to find common ground. We've got to have each other's back when it comes to certain things. And religious freedom is one of those things where we need to have each other's back.
Right, I agree. And folks, Teresa is kind of the author of a website that I thought was really cool that came up back when. Is that your site, Teresa? I mean that your Facebook page, Teresa? That we're all Catholics now thing?
No, that was Terry.
Oh, Terry. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
But I like it.
Yeah. It basically came about back during the mandate conception, where it became apparent that that Catholic and Christian businesses were going to be forced to pay for these things that they object to. And it's a Facebook page called We're All Catholics Now. Go check that out sometime. You can find it by just searching Facebook for We're All Catholics Now. But it basically deals with this, with the religious liberty that's being tromped all over by this administration. So, Teresa, where do we, I mean, what can be done about this? Can anything ever be done about this?
My fear is with Obama being reelected, we're stuck until the next person comes in, next person comes in.
No, I actually meant to bring the Catholic family back to the fold. I mean, how do we do that?
I think if we knew that, we wouldn't have this problem.
Okay.
I really don't know what the answer is, because you can't make people believe what they don't want to believe. And, you know, if the Catholic Church is putting out there, these are our beliefs, I guess they could get to the point where, fine, if you don't believe this way, you're no longer a member. But then, you know, probably, I would guess, half the church is gone.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, is that, like you say, is that half the church that even is there more than twice a year?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, well, all right.
And then, you know, the other thing is of the ones that voted, the 25% 5% that voted, who are they? Obviously, half of them aren't devout, and the other half probably are, but where's everybody else? And,
right.
You know, that's a whole other issue, which we've talked about in other conversations. Where were people this election cycle?
Yeah, and here's another issue. And this may, I think this may affect the Catholic vote more than it affects the quote-unquote other Christian vote. Catholics are, even today, more into caring for their fellow man. You have the soup kitchens. You have the charity.
Catholic charities. We have the hospitals.
You have the hospitals. And it may be possible that a lot of Catholics found themselves, you know, divided on this thing because they see Obama as the guy who's taking care of the needy, of the poor, of the sick, of the naked.
That's what they think, but that's not what reality is.
No, we understand that, but that may to some extent explain this phenomena here. They see Romney as not caring, you know, as killing some lady who had cancer because somebody that he doesn't even know caused the husband to get laid off or something like that.
And
they see Obama as the savior of all the poor sick people who don't have insurance.
Yeah, and you know, that's another big divide in the Catholic community is the whole insurance thing, because I am so against Obamacare, it's not even funny, but the social justice crowd, again, that's how they see Obama, and, you know, this is a good thing.
Right.
But at the expense of what else?
Well, there you go. You know, I mean, there's no such thing as a free lunch. I mean, at what expense do you do these things? And quite frankly, Teresa, and I've got to hand it to the Catholic Church on this, but if we, the church as a whole, were doing our job, we wouldn't need food stamps.
Exactly.
We wouldn't care. We wouldn't have any more poor people.
Right.
And we wouldn't have any more homeless people. So some of that, and I think
but that... Then... You know, yes and no, because back in the day, Jesus even said, there's always going to be. This is the reality of human. The question is, you know, what can we do to help as best we can?
Well, yeah, I didn't mean we wouldn't have any more poor people. I meant we wouldn't have any more hungry poor people. Jesus said the poor will always be with you. But you know, we could, I mean, if the church was doing their job, I mean, my gosh, and right here's why I'm opposed to churches being tax exempt myself. My gosh, we have churches in this little bitty town I live in, three I can think of right off the top of my head, that have $1 million in the bank. You know, I mean, that's not tax exempt, and they're sending tens of thousands. We talk about our country helping ourselves before we send any foreign aid. They're proud of their missionaries to Nigeria and Ethiopia and
yeah. And why aren't we helping ourselves, our people here first? Yeah,
that's right. That's right. And here we are sitting in a town where the food bank is begging for cans of peaches.
Right.
So yeah, I mean that's it. I mean if the church and I say we, meaning us other Christians and Catholics and Mormons, we're doing our job, a lot of this government help wouldn't even be necessary. So and then to some extent, I mean, at what point in history did the church just sit back and say, well, we don't have to do that anymore because that's taken care of?
Yeah.
So, I mean, which came first, the chicken or the egg thing.
Exactly.
So, there we go. If you guys have any questions on this demographic specifically, or for Teresa, or for how this thing, or any thoughts on how this thing should go or will go, give us a call at 347 877-1835. We're going to move on to some Benghazi stuff after the break. We're going to talk about all hell breaking loose in the Middle East, and we might even talk a little bit about no more Twinkies.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Roots Radio, this is the Friday Night Roundtable. Teresa's here, and Lisa's here, and we're having a good old time. Lisa?
Yes?
Are ho-hos too big to fail?
Are co-hosts? Too big to fail.
Ho-hos, ding-dongs, Twinkies.
Oh, I thought I was getting a subliminal message there. Am I off the radio program already? You know, I heard this today on Fox that maybe they're not too big to fail because I think what they're going to do is sell off individually. So I don't think we're going to lose our ding-dongs and Twinkies.
Well, all right. So basically what they're talking about is Hostess would, in dissolving, pay part of their bills by selling the secret recipe and the name Twinkies to Sarah Lee or who knows, Duncan Hines. So we will get keep our Twinkies and our ho-hos, but Hostess is gone, girls.
No, I didn't eat that stuff today.
Hostess is gone, and I'm telling you what, you can, if you're liberal, you're going to have your demons in this thing, and it's going to be the evil corporation. If you're conservative, you're going to have your demons in this thing, and it's going to be the evil union. But whoever you say is the demon in this thing, this is a consequence that springs directly from two Tuesdays ago. I mean, it is something that, Hostess told you this is what's going to happen. It's not like they just walked in one morning and gave everybody pink slips and said, that's it, we're closing the door without any warning. And it's a consequence. Papa John's people getting cut to 28 hours a week.
Did you all eat your Papa John's for dinner?
I didn't. I was gonna, but I talked to Terry today. I didn't even realize I worked in my yard all day. I didn't even realize that it was Papa John's Appreciation Day until Terry mentioned it. And by then, my wife had supper already done. So darn it, I didn't get to do that. I'll keep going to Papa John's. But these are not things that Obama got elected, so the world is coming down. I mean, you were told before you voted, brothers and sisters, that this was what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You knew it was coming. Did you think that Papa John's was just going to suck it up?
Well, if you throw the racist card at them, you would think they would suck it up.
Well,
I mean, kind of that's what happened, right? Now Papa John's is racist, and so now they'll have to change their mind.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's just started. It's just started. I mean, the unemployment statistics for last week were out, highest in 7 months, I think, for 1 week new unemployment claims, and I've really got to challenge that number because we knew 6 months ago that that was going to happen. And I'm not sure that 100% of that, ladies, has to do with Obama being elected and business was closing down. Some of this has to do with the correction that the media now has to make to the numbers
that's right.
that they've been suppressing for 6 months.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's all Obama-related.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not new. It's all Obama-related.
Well, and I don't mean to I have no love for the media, but I don't mean to point all those fingers at the media either, because it's the Bureau of Labor Statistics too that have been fudging the numbers, and now suddenly they've got to start accounting for these unemployed people they've been hiding under the bed for a while.
Right. And it's only going to get worse.
Oh,
it's
not going
to get better anytime soon.
It is. It's going to get much worse. And
well, look what the stock market did in the last week.
Exactly.
What do you think that's telling us? Hello.
Right. And that's why I say, in very 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 much disagreement with 99.9% of my friends and compatriots, we need to quit. We need to stand back. We need to quit fighting this thing. Because the last thing that should be allowed to happen in 2 years, when this thing comes absolutely crashing down, is there be any way that we can be blamed as obstructionists?
So, speaking on that piece, what should happen with the tax break for the rich scenario that's January 1st fiscal cliff?
I would let the president do what he thinks he needs to do. You know, I have a list here of 340 names of people who make over $500,000 a year and or have over $1 million in the bank who have denounced United States citizenship and moved to another country in the last 3 years. That list is going to double.
Yeah,
overnight.
If you push it, yeah.
And so I think, do you know that if you increased the tax rate to 100% on everyone in this country that makes $1 million or more, that is, if you took away from them every penny they made last year, you could not pay last year's deficit?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That if you increased to 75% the tax rate on everyone in this country who makes $250,000 or more, you took three-quarters of their money every year, three-quarters of their income every year for the next 10 years, you could not pay for just Obamacare for the next 10 years.
Yep.
I mean, and this is true as well. Obama and the Democrats have laid on the table all of this balanced approach that amounts to taxing the rich, and they have not laid a single spending cut on the table. Not exactly.
Well, because I think, you know, you'll never convince me otherwise. I think it's just all planned intentionally to collapse the economy.
Oh.
I think it's an intentional plan to collapse the economy and collapse into a one world government. It's just very clear to me.
Well,
there's nothing else it could be doing.
I mean, I believe you, and we've got to be awful careful when we go to work and when we, you know, when we go to the grocery store, when we go to church, that we don't take that out on the poor, ignorant liberal sitting in the pew next to us who really thinks this is about helping the poor, you know,
right.
Who's being drug along with this because yes, that's Obama. That is Barack Obama's plan, but that's not the plan of the average person on the street who thinks this is the way we need to be going. They just don't get it.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, it's awful easy for us to get out there in society and say, oh, you evil, you horrible person, you un-American heathen, you know, you're destroying this country, when they're not. I mean, yeah, they are, but they're not doing it on purpose. They don't get it. They don't understand.
That is true.
You're giving a pass to idiocy?
I am not giving a pass to idiocy. I am saying that the solution to idiocy is education, not castigation.
You know. True. Okay. I'm gonna challenge you on that one. There we go. You know, how much more education? Okay, it's idiocy. It's just idiocy, Dave. I mean, it's all of the information was there. Did you have a hard time finding the information? Because I didn't have a hard time finding the information. It was there in spades. There was more of it than I could stand. So, you know, for all those idiots that went to the polls and voted for the wrong thing because they were just trying to be nice, you know, and they went to the polls and they were uninformed about, you know, the debt ceiling coming next month or, you know, the proposition this or the proposition that they, you know, gave more power here or took power away there. You know, it's idiocy. All of the information is there if you take the time to look for it. It's not like it's hard to find.
But people don't want to look. They want it spoon-fed to them, and the media spoon-fed their message, not what reality is.
Yeah, but it's still idiocy. I mean, you're an idiot if you don't go out and get educated. I mean, you can't possibly educate folks anymore. I mean, it's all there. It's all there. You can lead a horse to water.
You can't make him drink, yeah.
You know, it's not like it wasn't there for them. It's not like there wasn't information on both sides so that they could make rational, informed decisions, you know? Like all the rest of us who took the time to look. I'm sorry, just idiocy. A little too radical?
No, I don't think it's too radical at all. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, but I don't know where to go with it. I mean, you know, ladies, when you and I, both of you and I, and you're both significantly younger than me, but I'm putting you in the generation with me. When we went to school, there was no big evil. We didn't get it. We didn't get that food stamps were bad things. We didn't get that. I mean, because it was an entirely different culture. It was food stamps were okay. We needed, you know, we had poor people who couldn't.
Oh, no, they were not okay. They were not okay. Food stamps were never okay. There was a stigma attached to welfare.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I didn't say that it wasn't embarrassing to be standing in a grocery line with food stamps in your hand. It was. But what I mean is that for us who weren't on food stamps, that they weren't the Satan that they are today. They were okay things. You know, the children needed to eat, but in that day we didn't have people, as a general rule, now on food stamps because they wanted to be.
Right, because they were there because they had to be. Yeah,
it was you went the extra mile to make sure you didn't go on food stamps.
And that, Lisa, when you say it's idiocy, that is the culture that these idiots grew up in.
Right.
Food stamps was a necessary thing. It was not a bad thing. It was a good thing because you didn't go on food stamps until you had to. You know?
Yeah,
and
you can't blame the election on the food stamp vote. I mean, there were plenty of idiots.
I'm not blaming the election on the food stamp vote. I'm blaming it on those idiots that you talk about that were raised in the culture where food stamps were not the Satan of the world, where Medicaid was not a Satan thing, where we didn't see this coming. We didn't see this, you know, and those people who grew up in that era, they raised children. And they raise children who believe, because their parents told them, that food stamps were there for people who lost their job until they could find a new job, who the mother of three whose husband died of a heart attack and didn't leave her any insurance. That's what food stamps are there for. And so you have children today running around who believe that's what food stamps are there for, when in fact, today... And that's what I'm saying, Lisa. The people you're calling idiots aren't the food stamp recipient moochers. They are the people who believe, because they were raised to believe it, that these social programs are there to help people. They're not there to help people anymore. They're there to buy votes.
But they're idiots because they haven't figured out that that has changed.
Right. Now, that's
true. There has been a change.
That's true. That's true. And they have not figured that out, and they are idiots because that information is available to them.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to teach them what's right and what's wrong.
Well, you're going to have to bring shame back into the culture, and good luck with that, because
yeah.
You know, politically correct left is not going to let that happen too easily.
Well, they are. They are. They're going to make it happen because as I've said, someday, sooner rather than later, somebody is going to stand up and say, we can't borrow any more money. Nobody will loan us money, and we can't pay your doctor anymore.
Yep.
And the best thing we can do, the best thing we can do in my mind, is to be there with what we already know to be the answer.
And
what?
It would be self-reliance and goodwill of your neighbors.
Exactly. I mean, we know that's the answer. History has proven that's the answer. We have all the facts on our side. We have all the math on our side. We have all the history on our side. And so all we can hope to do is be there. And we're going to have to be there and be vigilant, because this is going to be something where if they don't find that answer in short time, there's going to be hell to pay.
Well, there's
going to be another Greece with uprisings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Greece with more guns.
And lots of ammo.
Okay. What are we going to do about Benghazi? I mean, Petraeus did his thing today. It's clear now to everybody in the United States of America that the President of the United States knew within 24 hours what was going on here.
Yeah, big surprise.
So what do we do? I mean, I know Teresa's in favor of impeachment for charges of treason, or I mean, Lisa's in favor of impeachment with charges of treason. What do you think, Teresa?
I'm in 100% agreement there.
Thank
but
you.
What happened is another story.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, look at our Congress. You know, how's that going to happen?
Yeah, half of them are going to go for treason too. I mean, be impeached on treason charges too. I mean, that's the reason that you don't have impeachment and treason in the first place, is because it's a house of cards. Once one falls, they all fall, because they'll all, you know, you start pointing the fingers at them all. They're all guilty.
Well, you know, I'm not, once again, I mean, I don't know. You know, treason is, you know, if there's going to be a
get over it, Dave. I mean, sometimes it's just not nice. You know, sometimes you just cannot be nice.
They
have to stop being nice. You just can't. You got to get over it.
I got to get over it. But you know, I'm a 25-year military man, and treason is a serious word, and we don't just get to throw it around as though.
Oh, I'm not throwing it around. We have a president who intentionally let our ambassador and our Navy SEALs die.
That's true.
You know, he's been sending money.
And
to
how is that not treasonous?
I'm sorry?
How is that not treasonous?
Well,
exactly. Thank you so much. Okay, and he's been sending money to the Muslim Brotherhood for how long? How is that not treasonous? How is that not aiding and abetting the enemy?
It is not treasonous. It is not treasonous in my mind, because while it was wrong, and while it may have been an impeachable crime, it was not treasonous in my mind that we had a president who violated the law by selling arms to a known enemy of the United States so that he could raise funds to help someone in Central America that we told him not to help.
Excuse me?
And of course,
are you talking back at Reagan?
Yes. I mean,
Iran-Contra? I don't know enough about that. Sorry, I can't talk on that one.
We had a president. We had a president, and I was not in favor of charges of treason then, who sold weapons to Iran, an avowed enemy of ours, so that he could raise money behind the curtain to give to the Sandinistas in Central America, who the Congress had told him not to give any money to.
Well, if I have to say treason for Obama on this, then I'd have to say it on that to be consistent.
Right. And I wasn't in favor of treason charges against Ronald Reagan, and I'm not in favor of any treason charges. Now, that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be impeached. The man was negligently homicidal. You know, there's negligent, and again, the cover-up is the least of my worries. You know, the cover-up is horrible and it's criminal. But for goodness sakes, I mean, here's an embassy that didn't even have the security that every other embassy in the world has Marines there to guard the embassy. I mean, that's
just. Well, they were asking for help, and he refused it.
So,
okay.
Go ahead.
What do you define as treason? Tell me your definition of treason.
Aiding and abetting an enemy of the United States of America.
Okay, hello, Muslim Brotherhood.
There's more. There is a three-part definition that I'm looking at.
Okay.
Defensive acting to overthrow one's government or to harm or kill its sovereign.
Okay.
A violation of allegiance to one's sovereign or to one's state.
Okay.
The betrayal of trust or confidence, breach of faith, treachery. Bingo, number three, treason.
Yeah, and number one.
Well, kill a sovereign would mean kill Obama, and he's not killing himself.
I'm sorry. I must have misheard it.
Yeah, no, or to kill a sovereign.
Aiding and abetting the enemy?
Enemy? Well, again, this definition is dictionary.com. But the offense of acting to overthrow one's government or to harm or kill its sovereign, a violation of allegiance to one's sovereign or to one's state, the betrayal of trust or confidence, breach of faith, treachery.
Well, number three for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's...
And then that would still fall with Reagan. Even though I like the guy, he, you know, because of going to our enemy and buying from our enemy, that's
selling
a breach of trust or confidence.
Selling weapons to our enemy.
Selling weapons to our enemy.
Furious.
Yeah.
That Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious. Yes.
You know, we got so much on him. He should have been gone a long time ago.
Well, I mean, and I hearken back to an election of my middle age, when everyone was told and everyone knew, and in this case, the media was against the sitting incumbent president, and the media was breaking daily the Watergate affair. And they and Nixon got reelected anyway. I mean, I'm not surprised by any of this.
Well, because we've let our government get too big and it's not representing the people, you know, we don't have a Congress that supports the people.
Well, and a lot of it is something that you said, Lisa, a year ago when I first met you, and it struck me when I heard.
You have a long memory.
And that is that we are electing rock stars now. It doesn't have much to do with the government. You know, people are in love with this guy. You know, we said when we got together a year ago and Cain got booted, Romney just doesn't have it. He looks like a limp stick up there. You know, he doesn't have that magnetism. He doesn't have that rock star image that you've got to have now to be elected either governor of California or president of the United States.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a student council election. Is basically what it is, a popularity contest.
And you can increase your rock star status by promising, of course, more stuff to more people.
Sure. Yeah, that's what it is. And it goes back to idiocy, you know. And I've been listening for the last, I guess, a couple of weeks, you know, about how and why we failed to elect the people that we needed to elect. And everybody boils down to marketing and messaging, you know. And I would agree with that to some degree, but, you know, the messaging issue, I mean, the message was out there. The information was there for anybody who wanted to read it, anybody who wanted to take the time to look it up. It just boils down to idiocy. You have just got a huge population of people who do not bother to become informed. And it's that simple. We just have a huge idiotic.
So how do we break through that and get these people informed?
You know,
because for anything to change, that's what's got to happen.
I would agree. The only problem, I just don't think that people are in enough pain.
That's exactly
where Dave's point is. You know, let the world fall apart, and then maybe it'll open some eyes.
You know what? I mean, that's really how our first, you know, that's how we got our freedom in the first place, is because we had people who were suffering and that they were tired of it. They wanted their freedom, you know, and we've had generations. I mean, you know, they said, what is it, the Athenian... the Athenian government.
Oh, yeah. How they fell, the fall of Athens.
Every couple hundred years.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
It works.
That's exactly right. I mean, Teresa's got it there, or Lisa, I'm sorry. Lisa's got it there. You know, we were here, and colonies surviving quite nicely for 100 years before finally it got so bad. I mean, we were happy with living under the king. You know, we didn't. The French and Indian War, he came over here and took care of us and protected us. And he came over, you know, and sucked a little money out of us once in a while. But we could count on him, his ships bringing the spices and the goods. And everybody was perfectly happy until, like we just said, until... the tyranny just got so bad until the there's no such thing as a free lunch finally caught up with people, and that was it. I mean, we had the American Revolution. Now the beauty in my mind of the United States of America is that as Greece falls apart and England falls apart, as Spain falls apart, Germany falls apart, Europe falls apart, the euro collapses. Those civilizations, they don't have any history of liberty to go back to. They're not.
So when we fall, we have that history, so we'll go back to it.
We have
what you're saying.
That's right. We have a strength, and it's not that many generations back. I mean, there's probably nobody alive now. Not many people. I mean, my dad's still alive, and he can tell you about a time when guys worked for the same company for 100 years, and the company took care of them and they took care of the company, and he can tell you about how America grabbed the entire world by the bootstraps and pulled them out of World War II and pulled them out of a depression. But there's very few people alive who remember that. But we're not that many generations separated from it that there won't be still a taste. In my hope, I mean, somewhere in my dream, there when it collapses, there will still be a taste in people's mouths of what liberty was like, of what it was like to be born, knowing that for you individually, your limitations are only what you set in the United States of America. That people used to come here. Because when they got here, they could be whatever they wanted to be.
Right.
Well, they're not hurting. They're not hurting enough.
Nope.
So I looked up democracy and the fall that you were talking about, Lisa. Step one is you go from bondage to spiritual faith. Step two, from spiritual faith to great courage. Step three, courage to liberty. And that's when our revolution happened. From liberty to abundance. From abundance to complacency. From complacency to apathy. From apathy to dependence. And then from dependence back into bondage. So we're somewhere between 6, 7, and 8, in my mind.
Yeah, dependence, probably.
Apathy.
Apathy to dependence, which is step 7. So now we're getting into the dependence back into bondage, and then it can circle back and start over again if enough people wake up.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it's going to be one of those, you know, 12-step program deals. You got to hit bottom first. I don't think there's just not enough people. You know, I mean, if you go out to dinner, I mean, you live in St. Louis area, Teresa. You know, if you go out on a Friday night and try to get into a restaurant, there's still a waiting line.
Yeah.
You know, people still have money. They're not hurting. They still have their televisions, and you know, it's all good.
You know, I was in the grocery business, and I'm going to tell you right now, to a grocer, the best place to be in business is on the poor side of town, because it doesn't matter what happens to the economy. Those people, they may run out of gas money. They may run out of beer money, but they will always have food money.
Mm.
It comes on a little blue card once a month.
Right.
You know? And if you're a grocer in that side of town, it doesn't matter what the economy does. You're going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Until the government falls and doesn't have the money to give to those people.
Exactly.
You've got to get the government to get out of that business.
Yep. And
they won't until they can't afford it anymore, and then everything comes collapsing down.
That's right. And one of two things happens. Either austerity, which is what Europe is trying to go through, or the direction we're probably going to go, and that is print so damn much money that a wheelbarrow full of money no longer buys you a loaf of bread.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be both. It's going to be austerity and that both.
Yeah.
That combination. Because nothing, there won't be enough pain until both of those things happen.
Right. And now, change the subject.
Because you have to get the people. Okay.
Change the subject real quick. Let's get back to the culture, because something that Teresa just said about the, and she's talking about the economy when she talks about dependence and apathy and dependence and then bondage. This is a culture thing, and it comes from Cicero. And it is that every democratic society, every democratic culture has a lifespan, and we may be near the end of ours. And that this has to do with culture. If you start a society with a recognition of total liberty, in other words, I am free to do anything I want except kill you and steal your property.
Right.
You mean libertarian world?
Well, the way this country started.
The Constitution.
Yeah. What happens then is because, and this is a recognition of faith. This is a recognition that human beings are depraved. They are naturally depraved, and they will naturally seek the greatest hedonism, the greatest level of hedonism.
Sure, that's what we're getting to.
And so what is going to happen is that over a period of time, either the society will decay into a Nero fiddle while Rome burned, naked orgies all the time, or you will have to keep that from happening, withdraw by degree so much liberty out of the society to keep that from happening that it's no longer a society of liberty. And Cicero figured that lifespan was about 200 years. About five generations. So we may be there. We may be there. Teresa, thank you for coming along. Thanks for your insight on that other thing. And join us on Fridays from now on, please. Any night you don't have to work. Teresa is, by the way, a registered nurse. She brings with us, I called her along for her insight into the Catholic vote, but she also brings us some insight into what's going on inside the healthcare world. You're a NICU?
OB, and then I'm also part-time supervisor. in the hospital.
Okay. Lisa is the expert at Missouri Grassroots Coalition in homeschooling and education, and that's not going too well, is it, Lisa?
Homeschooling is going great.
No, I mean education.
Oh, well, public education, yeah. I mean,
it's idiocy. It's idiocy. They're all idiots.
It is. They're all idiots.
Okay, Monday night we have the Hour of Truth, and I'm going to start, I kind of gave a little teaser tonight, but I'm going to start, you know, I was going to move into Fair Tax as kind of a series on the Hour of Truth, but I'm going to put that off for as long as it takes to actually move, because right along this Let's Educate the World thing, we're going to start a series for as long as it takes where we go all the way back to people throwing tea in the water and define for anybody that will listen and learn why we have a constitution, what it is, what it means, what it does, and then we're going to follow that thing through Mabry in the Supreme Court, where the federal government assumed a crapload of power, where the Supreme Court decided themselves that they alone had the power to decide what was constitutional and what wasn't. Did we know that's not in the Constitution, that the Supreme Court gets to make those decisions? They gave themselves that power in Mabry versus Madison. And it's kind of been theirs ever since. Nobody challenged that. And then we'll follow that along to Wickard, where we got the Interstate Commerce Clause says they can do any damn thing they want to, just about. And we'll follow that along to Abraham Lincoln, who, in spite of the fact that he freed the slaves, probably was the chief trasher of the United States Constitution to ever have inhabited the White House. And what we'll do is we'll slowly try to build a knowledge base of how we got to a point where we have seven black-robed idiots sitting up here trying to decide if it's okay for a policeman to stop you for no reason except to make you roll down your window and see if you're drunk.
Mm.
Idiots.
So... I mean, that it's not something. It's something that actually took 250 years from the Constitution to the second president of the United States deciding that we needed to open the Senate session with a Christian prayer. That's how long it took to trash the thing. Okay, so that's what we're going to do on the Hour of Truth for the next little while. What are we going to do next week on Culture Vigilante, Lisa?
We have a great show lined up for next week. I'm kind of excited.
Good.
As you know, Ray Cuneo has been a regular guest for several weeks, giving us the lowdown on the UN and how that works and why we're all going into one world government and connecting the dots between him between that and the Obama administration's policies. We also have Will Estrada from parentalrights.org is going to be with us, and he's going to talk about a couple of treaties that are being heavily pushed through since Obama's been reelected, the UNCRC, UN Convention Rights of the Child, and the United Nations Convention on Persons with Disabilities. And he's going to give us a rundown on why those are very important treaties for us to follow and oppose, because there will be some pressure, I think, put on in the not-too-distant future to get those things passed through and what that's going to mean to you as a independent person with children and parental rights and those kinds of things. And then also, we have a very good friend of mine coming on, Dr. Brian Ray. Dr. Brian Ray is probably the world's most renowned expert on homeschool research, and he's going to come on and talk to us about some culture issues with institutional schooling and how those issues within the culture affect your ability to make decisions about home education and educational freedom for your kids.
All right. That sounds good. Lisa and I will be here Wednesday. Lisa will be here Wednesday, and I'll just kind of be hiding in the closet. Who is that man behind the curtain? And then on Thursday, your friend and ours, Kevin Harded, the old hillbilly, he comes along with some really common sense, down to earth Ozark Mountain common sense on how things should really be done. Stuff that even idiots get sometimes not. And then on Friday night.
Logic.
And then on Friday night of next week, another of these exciting sessions, the Missouri Grassroots Roundtable, where we kind of just take on anything and everything. You folks call in. You folks listen. But you folks go right now to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button. Click on the PayPal button when you get there, and send us a buck. Send us a buck. It's for the kids. Hey, good night, Lisa.
Good night, Dave. Good night, Teresa.
Good night.
Good night, boy.
It's been great. Thanks. This is Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You folks have a great weekend. We love you all.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.